Last week we started kind of a study of a combination of Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, going to look at parts of those three, not everything in all of them, but different parts that certainly have some relevance to the New Testament. And the first thing that comes up in Leviticus that has some relevance, some application in the New Testament, is all the different sacrifices or offerings. We started with the voluntary ones. And of course, the voluntary ones, there's no real way of knowing how many people would do that every day because it was voluntary. So there's really no way, other than, of course, there's going to be lots and lots of sacrifices every day because it depended upon, and the same with tonight's, your feeling of graciousness, your feeling of thanksgiving, and your kind of your feeling about God. And so there was a lots of different reasons you would make these sacrifices. And so last week in Leviticus 1, we talked about the first one and what it was about, and it was like a lot of the other sacrifices. It depended upon your possessions, your wealth. You know, if you had the ability, then you were supposed to give it from your herd. If not, from the lambs or goats. And then if you couldn't even do that, then birds. And there were very specific processes, very specific details about what you were to do and not to do. But maybe one thing I didn't bring out last week that is also true of tonight's sacrifice, and that is, even though God gave them specific directions, there was also some flexibility in there. Like when He said it was to be done during the morning and evening. Well, that didn't narrow it down to a specific hour or a specific minute or anything like that. There was some flexibility in there as to the times. And there were some other things that was kind of flexible about. So when God can, He gives us flexibility, doesn't He? Just like meeting on the Lord's Day. That's specific that we meet on the Lord's Day, and it doesn't have to be at 8 o'clock, or it doesn't have to be at 9 o'clock, or it doesn't have to be at 9:30, it doesn't have to be at 10. He's given us some flexibility about when on the Lord's Day to meet, but He's specified that it's the Lord's Day. And same way with singing. He has specified that it's to be singing, no other type of music, but He's not specified what kind of songs, as far as, you know, how many or what they specifically have to say. They have to teach and admonish, but lots of songs can do that. So there's flexibility too. Same way with the offering. We're supposed to lay by and store upon the first day of the week, but He doesn't tell us where to collect that. There's all different types of methods that's over the years been practiced. While there's specific details, there's also flexibility. And we see that in the Law of Moses as well. There's built-in flexibility. And so that was the first one we had last week. Tonight we want to look at the grain offering, the second one, which is also a voluntary offering. And this is found in Leviticus chapter 2. Leviticus chapter 2. Would someone read just the first verse? That'll kind of get us started. Leviticus chapter 2, verse 1.
And when they will offer a meat offering unto the Lord, his offering shall be of fine flour, and he shall pour oil upon it and put frankincense thereon.
Okay, so we understand from this that, first of all, this is made from flour, so there's some type of grain involved, and it's supposed to be what? And the word fine here in the Hebrew is not necessarily meaning sifted real finely. It means the best, good wheat, the finest, we should say, shall be of the finest flour. So again, you don't bring something that's laying on the floor all day and pick it up and say, okay, this is what I'm going to sacrifice or offer. You sacrifice the best. Even when it comes down to just flour, you get the best flour you have, the best of the flour. And typically it was wheat, but it didn't necessarily have to be. It could have been, they raised other types of grain as well. But so it says, when anyone does this, this is what it's supposed to be like. So there wasn't even a set time to do this. You know, the first one we talked about last week, there was a morning time and an evening. This one, there is no specified time at all. So there was a lot of flexibility here as to when it could be done. The ingredients are significant. In the Old Testament, what did grain tend to represent? It's sometimes called the bread of something. Bread of life, right? Bread of life, right? And it's still, that concept is still with us, right? Still with us, the bread of life. Oil, here it's, and we talked about this last week, typically it's olive oil because that's the one that's used predominantly in Palestine and in that area. And oil, when you poured something on it, that signified something very rich and prosperous. Yes.
You know, that wheat back then must have been better than ours because when they found that wheat seed in that pyramid.
Oh, uh-huh, right.
They claimed that was a better strain of wheat than anything we had today.
Yeah.
And it actually could be germinated.
Mm-hmm.
After
yep.
all, yeah. Thousands of years.
So we've got oil, we've got the fine flour, and then we've got frankincense on it. And of course, that was also, it was aromatic, used for its, you know, sweet odor, sweet aroma, and quite often involved in the idea of prayer. It was used for that idea. So when anybody was to do that, he was to put those three things together, okay? Now, verse 2 says, he shall bring it to Aaron's sons. Of course, so we're talking again about the high priesthood. The priest, one of whom shall take from it his handful of fine flour and oil with all the frankincense. And the priest shall burn it as a memorial on the altar, an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. Now, what's different about this sacrifice as opposed to the one last week already, what's different about it? I mean, there's several things, but what would one of them be? That's right. Last week they did the whole thing, right? Skinned it, then burnt the whole thing. Here he just takes the handful of it, right? And I guess that would depend on how big his hand is, but anyway, he takes a handful of it. All right, the priest. Takes it from it and does what? Burns it there on the altar. And he says, when it's offered, it goes up as a sweet aroma to the Lord. A sweet aroma to the Lord. This is found, and we'll look at some, this is also talked about in Leviticus chapter 6 as well, but this altar or this offering seems to have been similar to the first one in a sense and more concentrating on the idea of you do this, it's voluntary, but it's when you're thankful for something. You know, you're thankful for, you know, what God has given you. He's given you the grain and He's provided you the oil, and so it's, you know, you're thankful for it. It's not for a specific one sin that you did, like we'll talk about the sin offering and the trespass offering later on in the book. But this is more of a voluntary one for goodness, for gratitude, for thanksgiving. You know, God providing things for you. So, you know, we certainly, and we'll talk more about this later, the idea of that when we're thankful, you know, we need to offer up to God a prayer. We don't offer up physical things like that in this age. But our prayers are supposed to be a sweet aroma, right? Like we talked about in Revelation. Prayers are supposed to go up to God as a sweet aroma. So when we go to Him with thanksgiving, it's very similar to what they did back then with some of these different offerings and sacrifices when they burnt. They went up as a physical aroma. Well, our prayers of, you know, gratitude and thanksgiving and so forth go up to God like that. Kind of a spiritual, symbolic sweet aroma. All right. Oh, yes. You know, I've read some about that this week, and some they had, you know, different ideas about why all the frankincense but not all the flour. There wasn't any consensus that I saw about why all the frankincense, other than that was the smell part. That was the aroma part. And so that was, if you take some of the flour and some of the oil, then all the frankincense, then you're going to get something that's very sweet smelling, a very aromatic odor going up to God. Whether that had anything to do with the real, I have no idea. But
Mm-hmm.
I think it was, yeah. It was or represented something of richness, yeah. Well, possible too. And there's something from the grain offering here, we'll see that you know some of it was kept. Oh, verse 3. Let's go ahead and read verse 3 because that leads up to it. It says, the rest of the grain offering shall be holy to the Lord made by fire. Now, there were two altars that things were burned on in the tabernacle. There was this altar of burnt offering, and then there was the altar of incense. But this type of offering, if we go back to Exodus, couldn't be offered on the altar of incense. It was forbidden. So this one had to be done on the altar of burnt offering. So there were, you know, two different altars, two different purposes. But this one was not to be put on the altar of incense. It was forbidden. The grain offering, at least according to some sources, seemed to be one of the major sources of, if you want to call it wealth, what the priest received. Most of it came through the grain offerings. In other words, if you were to go back and see where the priests got a lot of their... we always think about income and being in terms of money, but of course it wasn't back then. But in terms of what they got here, a lot of it came through grain offerings. And those were voluntary. They were voluntary. But they were voluntary in the sense that you were giving it because you were thankful. And that's very similar to what we do on Sunday. You know, we're thankful to God for how He has blessed us and been gracious to us and provided for us in the prior week. And based upon that thankfulness and how God has provided, then we give a portion back to Him. So, very similarly, the grain offering did the same thing for the people in the law of Moses. You know, it was voluntary, but it was based on how thankful they were for what God had done for them. And then they would go take these grain offerings to Aaron and his sons, and you know, they'd take a certain amount, and then the rest they would keep and, you know, burn the handful. But it went up as that sweet aroma to God because people were thankful. Thankful for what God had done for them, provided for them. And I think there's some, you know, there's a lot of significance. You know, the priests were provided for back then. And, of course, we provide for preachers and missionaries today. Again, it's all voluntary. You know, God doesn't say what you have to do, X amount of this or X amount of that. It's primarily how thankful you are. You know, how thankful are you for what God has done for you? And that is, you know, I think a significant point. It goes back to how thankful you are. All right. There's some other things that are different about this as opposed to the ones in first chapter. And if you bring as an offering a grain offering, different ways that this grain offering can be done. Okay? There's different ways of preparing it. That's the way of saying it. If you bring as an offering a grain offering baked in the oven, it should be unleavened cakes of fine flour mixed with oil or unleavened wafers anointed with oil. Or maybe the idea of something being kind of spread over it. Okay? So there was one way, okay, one way of preparing it. Now notice the ingredients are fixed. It's the fine flour, it's the oil, frankincense is put on it, but the ingredients are the same, but there's different ways of preparing it. The first way is the oven, and you either make cakes or like thin wafers. So more flexibility, right? We talked about flexibility. There's some flexibility here. Some things, inflexible, the ingredients were inflexible, method of preparing it. So, you know, when God can, He allows for flexibility. So, okay, that's one. If your offering is a grain offering baked in a pan, okay, well, that's a different process, but it's the same ingredients. Same thing, fine flour. And of course, it has to be unleavened. I think we might have talked about this a little bit last week. because that one, you know, you couldn't, leaven or honey, we'll talk about in a minute. Leaven and honey both represented corruption. Of course, leaven would get in and cause something like you put in bread to rise, okay? Well, honey was used in the fermentation process. So in the Old Testament in particular, leaven and honey both represented things that were corruptible. But also, if you were to go back and look at the countries, the nations around Israel, you look at what they offered to their pagan deities, a lot of it were things with leaven and honey. So that might have been kind of a twofold reason why these things were forbidden. Because they represented fermentation, and things in the Old Testament that are fermented represented corruption. And then the other side is, these were what pagans offered, so God's people weren't supposed to offer it. So it might have been either one or both as a reason why they were not to be used. I think I kind of got ahead of myself a little bit. But so baked in an oven, baked in a pan. He says, you shall break it in pieces and pour oil on it. It's a grain offering. If your offering is a grain offering baked in a covered pan. So there's like skillets or what? Maybe kind of what we would call a skillet, sort of. And then one that's a covered type pan. Same thing, the fine flour and oil. You shall bring a grain offering that's made of these things to the Lord. And when it's presented to the priest, he shall bring it to the altar. Then the priest shall take from the grain offering a memorial portion and burn it on the altar. It's an offering made by fire, a sweet aroma to the Lord. No grain offering which you bring to the Lord shall be made with leaven, for you shall burn no leaven nor any honey in any offering to the Lord made by fire. Now when leaven and honey are put in things, not by themselves, but when they're put in things, that's when the fermentation and corruptibility and so forth happens. Now by themselves, if you just have honey by itself, it doesn't cause anything to ferment or be corrupted. It's only when it's a part of something else that you have fermentation or corruption. Honey by itself doesn't ferment. Okay, it doesn't turn into anything that's fermented. Same thing with leaven. You take a package of leaven and you just leave it alone. It doesn't ferment into anything. It has to be added to stuff. So if you you were forbidden to add leaven and honey into this. That's what he forbids, because that's where the fermentation comes from. As before, they take it and give it to the priest, and they were supposed to offer it. Now, verse 12. As for the offering of the first fruits, hey, this is a little different, but it's kind of a part of what he's been talking about. You shall offer them to the Lord, but they shall not be burned on the altar for a sweet aroma. And every offering of your grain offering you shall season with salt. Okay, now there's something else now involved here. Regardless of how it's cooked, oven, pan, covered pan, whatever, every offering of your grain offering you shall season with salt. You shall not allow the salt of the covenant of your God to be lacking from your grain offering. With all your offerings, you shall offer salt. Of course,
they offered the salt with it separately. Because salt,
you mean, did they sprinkle it on there?
Yes, salt,
or did they burn it separately?
Salt itself is a leavening agent.
And salt, when it's put on other ingredients, does what? Just the opposite, right? It keeps it from being corrupted. So that seems to be the reason salt was used. Salt maintains what it's put on. Like, of course, that's why you put it on meat or in the old days. In the old days, those of you who remember that, the old days, you put it on it to keep the meat from being corrupted. Okay? So salt kind of had just exactly the opposite qualities of the honey and the leaven. Again, when it's put on or in something. Now, just by itself, salt doesn't have any sort of corrupting abilities. It's only, again, when it's mixed with stuff. Alright? And the salt of the covenant, and it's even talked about in the New Testament, when something is salted, matter of fact, this this image is used to talk about the day of judgment. People, when they at the day of judgment, they are salted with salt. And the idea is that the way, or essentially the way you die is the way you enter into judgment, and there is no changing. In other words, salt preserves how you die. If you die a sinner, that's how you enter into judgment. If you die a saint, that's how you enter into judgment. So a salt has those type of qualities. So going even all the way back to the early days of the law of Moses, we have the idea of something purifying, like salt, maintaining something. The other hand, the leaven and honey, causing things to be corrupted and fermented. And those same ideas, figuratively, are transferred into the New Testament. You know, the idea of we're to keep ourselves pure, we're to keep ourselves incorruptible. Of course, we don't do it by physically adding salt or physically adding leaven. It's how we live. You know, it's how we live and what we do with our lives, the choices we make, those type of things. So, a lot of times the Old Testament had the physical things, and from that, in the New Testament, we learn how we're to live today by looking at those physical things we're using in the Old Testament. So even early days of the law of Moses, the people were being taught the difference between, you know, things that were corruptible, things that were incorruptible, things that were pure, things that were profane, things that were common, things that were clean. So that idea God is trying to get His people to understand. And the, one of the main ways they were to do that was not let the nations around them corrupt them. And that's, of course, what did happen. They did allow the nations to corrupt them. But they were being taught from the earliest days not to let that happen. Well, we need to probably go on here. Okay. Talked about salt. They're all to be salted. If you offer a grain offering of your first fruits to the Lord, you shall offer for the grain offering of your first fruits green heads of grain roasted on the fire, grain beaten from full heads. And you shall put oil on it and lay frankincense on it. It's a grain offering. Again, that's the same ingredients, the oil and the frankincense and so forth. Then the priest shall burn the memorial portion, part of its beaten grain and part of its oil, again with all the frankincense, as an offering by fire to the Lord. Now, to keep that in mind, let's turn over to Leviticus chapter 6, because it adds a couple things that I want to cover before we finish. Leviticus chapter 6, starting in verse 14. This is some additional principles about the grain offering. Leviticus chapter 6. This is the law of the grain offering. The sons of Aaron shall offer it on the altar before the Lord. Now, we already knew that. He shall take from it his handful of the fine flour of the grain offering with its oil and all the frankincense which is on the grain offering, and shall burn it on the altar for a sweet aroma as a memorial to the Lord. And the remainder of it Aaron and his sons shall eat with unleavened bread. It shall be eaten in a holy place. In the court of the tabernacle of meeting they shall eat it. So there's something we learn about it. Aaron and his sons couldn't eat it any place they wanted to. They were told specifically where they had to eat it. They were to eat it with the unleavened bread, again showing the idea of incorruptibility, but also they were told where they were to eat it, in the court of the tent of meeting. So this also emphasized the fact of holiness and keeping it apart. They just didn't eat it anywhere out in the common world. No, they were supposed to eat it in this court of the tent of meeting. So it emphasized that holiness, the separation that they were to have, especially, of course, the high priest. And these were the ones that were offering it. These were the ones who were eating it. But we learn some other things. The next verse. It shall not be baked with leaven. Okay, we talked about already why that was to be. I have given it as their portion of my offerings made by fire. It is most holy, like the sin offering and the trespass offering. Okay, now we haven't talked about those yet. Those were for specific sins. And he says, this is most holy. Okay, so he puts it as far as the holy aspect of it. with the sin offering and the trespass offering. But notice what else happens with the grain offering. All the males among the children of Israel may eat it. It was only the males allowed to eat it. It shall be a statute forever in your generations concerning the offerings made by fire to the Lord. Everyone who touches them must be holy. And then there's the idea of holiness stressed again. This was the idea of, you know, being holy, being separate, being clean, being pure. All of this was kind of involved in this. Where was the other thing I wanted to mention? I think I've already gotten by it. Well, I can't find it. But this was something that they did every day. This would be something that the high priest did every day. There would be grain offerings every day. So the high priest would offer that handful every day. They would take their portion every day. So this was something that the high priests were reminded of every day, that they were to be holy. They were to be clean. They were to be pure. So that it was a common thing then that for them that they would remember to do that. All right, anything else? Okay, just a couple of things. I know we're maybe a few more minutes here. Oh, I'm sorry. Let's see. This is the offering of Aaron and his son to this offering of the beginning of the day.
It's
to
be used half in the morning, half at night.
Uh huh. I don't remember. Yeah, it must be a little different because verse 23, for every grain offering for the priest shall be wholly burned, it shall not be eaten. Well, we already learned from the grain offering that it was to be eaten by Aaron and his son. So this must be a special one. I didn't have a chance to look at that. This must be one that was special for Aaron. Because Aaron and his sons could offer a grain offering as well, of course,
okay.
Because they were...
Yeah. In verse 20 it says, this is the grain offering of Aaron.
Okay, yeah. I kind of skipped over that. Yeah, this is the one that just Aaron and his sons. So it would be a little different. But Aaron and his sons could be, you know, they should be thankful just like anybody else. So they would be making their own grain offerings, but they wouldn't eat of their own grain offerings. They just ate of everybody else's and took of everybody else's grain offering. But their own, it was a complete sacrifice if they did it themselves. So
an offering was made when he was anointed.
When he became high priest, yeah. And well, that's when it started, right? Began on the day when he was anointed. And in that one, instead of a handful, which probably could vary quite a bit, this one was specific, a tenth of an ephah of fine flour. So that's a pretty specific amount as opposed to a handful. So there was some differences between those, but you know, not a great deal, but a little bit of difference. And again, I think the main point being that Aaron and his sons couldn't eat from their own offering, which I think there's some significance there. They only could eat from the other offerings, not their own.